It's September 6th, and this is Rabbi Adler Shiur.
Boker Tov. Before we begin, two dedications of the Shiur this morning. Miriam Esrus has dedicated this morning our Shiur to the memory of Avraham David ben Mordechai. This is David Kornfeld, Zichronon LeBracha, who passed away just a few days ago. Family still sitting Shiva. There's a Shiva notice outside. I knew the individual back from the old home, actually, and from Ramat Eshkol. He davened in the same shul that my parents davened in, Ramat Eshkol. And this is Marcia Tekazina, who comes to our shiur sometimes, and she's sometimes here, different shiurim, but I don't see her here at the moment, has dedicated all of today's learning in memory of her son, Chaim Mordechai ben Avraham Yitzchak Isaac, who passed away many, many years ago from an illness. So it's been quite a few years already. Okay. We're using last week's sheet because we only got through about 40% of it. And I want to build on some of the ideas that we talked about. So the thrust of the shiur was the custom, the minhag of blowing shofar in the month of Elul. We saw the possibility that this can be divided into two different categories. One was the blowing shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul, the very day of Rosh Chodesh Elul. And the rest of the month is a different category. Or let's say of a lower category in terms of the obligation. There was a possibility that on Rosh Chodesh Elul, it was a bona fide takana institution of our Chachamim. And then the rest of Elul becomes just a minag. And because of that, there were different customs that evolved that on the Rosh Chodesh, more than what we blow today for Chodesh Elul was blown, but rather a whole set of Tkiya Shvarim Teruah Tkiya, and Tkiya Shvarim Tkiya, and Tkiya Teruah Tkiya. And then for the rest of the month is what most of us do in shul in the morning, just one line of the blowing, Tkiya Shvarim Teruah Tkiya. This led to a whole discussion. This led to a whole discussion of the nature of the custom of blowing shofar on the month of Elul. What exactly does it signify? But if you take a look in source number 2, but the very last paragraph of source number 2, it's about 10 lines before the beginning of source 3. It begins with the word vida, and you should know. Vida od, and you should also know. This is continuation of the Tshuvot v'Hanhagot of Rav Moshe Sternbuch, Zichronon Levracha, the posek from the Eidah Haredit, who passed away several years ago. He writes, Vida od, and you should know, this is what he's going to say now, is going to be a very novel idea, because most of us who are even a regular shul goers and hear the shofar, never really aware of this kind of possibility. The custom to blow the shofar in the month of Elul, zeu betzibur dafka. It's only with a minyan. It's only with a minyan, which means that if you happen to daven at home, which can happen, and you know, the world does not cave in, it's not an ason, it's not a calamity, a person davens at home, it happens, you know, whatever the reason is, a person davens at home. So the person happens to have a shofar at home during the month of Elul, there's no issue at all that he should take out a shofar and blow it for himself. He says it's comparable to dumya, it's compared to the tkiyot de musaf de Rosh Hashanah, the blowing of the shofar in the context of the tfilat musaf, not the blowings before Musaf, but the blowing of shofar during Shmon Esrei. Now, most of Am Yisrael, or everybody, blows the shofar during the Chazaras Hashatz, three times. Once after the Bracha of Malchiyot, once after Zichronot, and once after Shofarot. Each blowing comes in a package of 10. Tkiyah Shvarim Teruah Tkiyah, Tkiyah Shvarim Tkiyah, Tkiyah Teruah Tkiyah. So you have 10 times 3, 30 kolot. And in some shuls, they also blow it in the silent Shmon Esrei, which causes somewhat of a problem because the Baal Tekeah has to look around and see if at least most of the people have gotten to the station of Melech HaKol HaAretz, Mekadesh Sova V'Yom HaZikaron. But you know, you can't wave, you can't raise your hand, you're in the middle of Shmon Esrei. So it becomes a little bit problematic. But the principle or primary minhag is to blow the tkiot in the Chazaras HaShatz only. And I say again, those shuls that blow it also in the silent, that's okay. There's a basis for it. But that's not where the minhag came from. The minhag comes from blowing the shofar in the Chazaras HaShatz. Why? One of the last things I ever heard from my Rebbe the Rav, and I can put the target date on it, it was the summer 1985. My family was in the States for a wedding of my sister-in-law, and not the one sitting here, the baby sister. And my brother and I, we went up to Boston. It was the last time the Rav Zichron Lebracha gave the Yarche Kala to the rabbis of the RCA, the Hasidut Rabbanim, the Rabbinical Council of America. The Rav was in such poor physical shape already, and also his mental capacities were failing. The Rav, unfortunately, had Parkinson's, and he had dementia. Don't ask. The greatest mind of the millennia, this is what happened to him. And for the last 7 years of his life, he just wasn't with us, really. He passed away in 1993, and I'm talking about now 1985. It was mamash from his last shiurim that he gave. He was wheeled in a wheelchair. He gave two shiurim. One was about an hour and a half where it was incomprehensible. It was like the man was talking. My brother was sitting there crying. I can just tell you, sitting there crying. That's how we were all, in Yiddish we say tzabrochen. You know, can you translate that? Tzabrochen? I mean, you know what I mean. It was really shattered. The next morning, and this we heard because some of the medication didn't kick in yet, he was more lucid, and it was like a flash of the old Rav. You know, we got like a little bit of a flash. And I mean, obviously it wasn't a shear that he sat and prepared from scratch. It was rehash. He was just pulling out of the drawer rehashed material. But not all of us heard all of the rehashed material. And even if we did hear it here and there, nevertheless, there were always new things that get added on. And he raised the question of why the Rambam, when he talks about the mitzvah of Shofar, he begins the section in a very standard way, very standard expression. Mitzvah taseh min haTorah, it's a biblical commandment, lishmoa truat haShofar b'Rosh Hashanah, to hear the sounds of the Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, sheneemar, as it says, Yom Terah Yelachem. It's a very, very standard opening of any unit of halakha. There's a biblical commandment to do such and such as it states in the Chumash. And then he gets into the details. Most of the mitzvot, the obligation to perform the mitzvah is upon the individual. Which means if you happen to be on Mars, you still have to eat matzah on the first night of Pesach if you can figure out when Pesach is. That's a different shaila, right? And you still have to, put on tefillin, and you still have to do other mitzvot. It's called a chovat hayachid. It's a chovat. It's an obligation that you have to do. And that category, by the way, can be divided into two: those that are personal. You yourself have to do it, right? You can't ask another fellow, do me a favor, put on tefillin for me because I'm on a trip or I forgot my tefillin, somewhere. So put on tefillin again, have me in mind. That's not going to work. Or I get indigestion for matzah, so do me a favor, eat another kezayit, have me in mind, be moitzi me. No, that's not going to work either. So there are all these mitzvot that will not work. But a mitzvah like tzedakah, a mitzvah like taking off challah, a mitzvah like taking off truma and meiser, a mitzvah like kiddushin, giving the ring to the kala, all kinds of mitzvot that can be done by a shaliach, a brit milah. You know, the father's supposed to make the brit. But all right, we have a professional moyel who does it. A person's supposed to write a sefer Torah. You commission a sefer stam to do it for you. You pay him, but he's doing it as a shaliach. So there are certain mitzvot that are transferable by shlichut, by messenger, by proxy, and they work. So you have to study the halachot, which are and which aren't, and they become two categories. But all of these mitzvot are personal obligations. The only thing is that some of them, there's a concept, shlucho shel adam kemoto, you can have another person do it on your behalf. Well, this we understand. Then there are a handful of mitzvot that are never given to the individual. They were given to the community of Klal Yisrael. They are corporate mitzvot, not individual mitzvot. The individual Jew does not have to get up in the morning and say, looking for a new mitzvah? Here, let's go. Let's do this mitzvah. Like appointing a king. So I don't like Bibi Netanyahu, but I like, you know, my my brother. So I'm going to make my brother, you know, King such and such the first. It has no value whatsoever. It's like selling me to Brooklyn Bridge. I mean, it has absolutely no value whatsoever. Because the individual Jew was never given the mitzvah of Son Tasim Alecha Melech. Who received the mitzvah? Klal Yisrael. Now Klal Yisrael is a corporate entity. So when there's a corporate entity, you have a corporation. So a corporation is a goylem, right? A corporation can't breathe and eat and make decisions. So there are human beings who function as the board of directors of the corporation. They make the decision on the behalf of the corporation. So who's the board of directors for Klal Yisrael? It depends which mitzvah it is. Sometimes it's the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin, that's the board of directors. There are 71 chachamim who make decisions. They could make it into what's called a mishal am. They can ask everybody, you know, make it into a vote, you know, through a referendum, or they can take the action on their own unilaterally, and it's like the electoral college, and they appoint the king. They can do it, but it's not the Sanhedrin appointing the king. It's Klal Yisrael appointing the king, and that's what led Rav Kook Zatzal to suggest. That in the absence of the Sanhedrin, in the absence of a Navi who recommends the candidacy of Shaul HaMelech, David HaMelech, imagine he's just recommending a candidacy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't put it on us. It's not a theocracy. It's a democracy here. Except that it's not a two-party system or as we have a 37-party system. It's a one-party system. And the vote is yes or no by the Sanhedrin, which means Am Yisrael can say no to the candidacy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought forth through a Navi like Shmuel HaNavi. They could. That doesn't mean they did it, but they could have done it. They had the authority. So Rav Kook said, in the absence of the Navi and the Sanhedrin, the authority reverts back to Klal Yisrael. And therefore, when you go to the polls, you are in partial fulfillment of the mitzvah of Som Tasim Lecha Melech, not as an individual, that is part of Klal Yisrael. And how does the Rambam define Klal Yisrael? I know there's some people who sit here who have residence in Chutz Laaretz, so don't be offended, but the Rambam says it's all the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. That's Klal Yisrael. He says it several times, by the way. Several times. So who are the Jews in Chutz Laaretz? Mishpocha. When you need help. Those are the people you turn to when you need help. But they're not Klal Yisrael. They're not Klal Yisrael. You go tell that to the Rabbanim in America and Europe and Australia. Go tell them. I say it openly. You know, some of you have heard me in Chutz Laaretz already. You know,
are the Arabs who are voting part of Klal Yisrael?
No, the Arabs are not part of Klal Yisrael. I'm Yisrael. Oh, it's a serious question.
The vote shouldn't count.
Are the Israelis living in?
So that's a question. That's a question about the halachic status of the Sanhedrin when you have non-Jews as part of the corporate entity. That's a good question. And go further. What about somebody in the Knesset who doesn't believe in God? You know, and you have some. You have some. So, these are technical questions, and they're not small questions. People have given thought to how this functions. But Rav Kook believed that the overall authority reverts back to the people, and when you go to the polls, you are in partial fulfillment of the mitzvah of Som Tasim Alecha Melech as part of Klal Yisrael. I've said here more than once, my father, Elv Shalom, the first time he voted in the elections in 96, walked out of the polling booth and made a Shechiyonu. So I said, Shechiyonu? And what did you make a Shechiyonu? I said, I look at Shulchan Aruch, Hayotze Me'akalpi Mevorach Shechiyonu. It doesn't say that, you know. There's no such halacha in Shulchan Aruch. So he said it was the first time he participated in the mitzvah of Som Tasim Alecha Melech. And coming from someone who witnessed Kristallnacht in 1938 in Berlin, it was a tremendous simcha to participate in the election of a prime minister. No matter what the outcome, by the way. No matter what the outcome. This is a tremendous simcha. And this is the kind of Zionist house I grew up. Didn't come from the yeshiva I went to as a kid, you know. It's important to know that the Rav Kook had this as a mitzvah. So this is a corporate mitzvah. Building Beit HaMikdash is a corporate mitzvah. An individual cannot have this great idea of blowing up mosques and then building Beit HaMikdash. You can't do that. It's criminal. It's criminal halachically. Forget about this legally. It's criminal. You can't do that. The eradication of Amalek, here there's some dispute, but the Rambam believes it's completely corporate. You cannot say, hey, he's an Amaleki, bang. You're going to be held accountable for murder. You can't do that. Klal Yisrael has an obligation to eradicate Amalek. Now the question always is, who's Mr. Klal Yisrael who does the job, gets the job done? So this morning there was a reference in the paper to the Eichmann affair of 1960, because And this is very close to my heart, El Al. El Al is flying to Argentina, which, by the way, is going to be very relevant for my daughter-in-law, who goes once in a while to visit her mother. The direct flight from here to Argentina. The last El Al flight from here to Argentina was when we abducted Eichmann. So this is 1960. So the Eichmann trial, and then the conviction, and then his execution. He was the only person in the state of Israel ever executed. So he was executed in the name of Klal Yisrael, not in the name of the state of Israel. Because one of the arguments of the defense was that the state of Israel had no jurisdiction, because there was no such thing as the state of Israel during the days of the Shoah. So how can you, you know, take the case? So the judges at the beginning accepted it in the name of Klal Yisrael, as Shlichei Tzibur of Klal Yisrael. This wasn't the state of Israel against Eichmann. And it was Am Yisrael, it was a Kiddush Hashem, the whole thing was Kiddush Hashem. So you can do some, and that's why it was Mechemet Amalek. He deserved it. He deserved it. You know, the fact that the Pope asked for compassion at the end, give me a break, you know. Pope asked for compassion. He's got what he deserved, and unfortunately not even enough. But Seder, but this is called Mechemet Amalek. So these are corporate mitzvot. But the Rav said a very interesting chiddush, that there are a handful of mitzvot that fall into both categories, both private, personal, individual, and corporate, tzibur. And they have to be fulfilled sometimes in different manners, sometimes identically, but they carry two functions. The classic example is davening, tefillah. When you're alone, there's an obligation to daven. So if you're on a deserted island in the Pacific, you have to daven, according to the requisite time framework. But if you happen to be davening with a minyan, so what's a minyan? Minyan doesn't mean 9 plus 1. 9 is 9 individuals. 10 doesn't mean 10 individuals, and now you can say Baruch Hu and Kaddish and Kedusha and Kriyat HaTorah and Birkat Kohanim. No. 10 plus means it's a new thing. It's an entity, it's a corporate entity, it's Klal Yisrael. And when you're davening with Klal Yisrael, the advantage, the qualitative advantage, it's not a quantitative advantage, the qualitative advantage is that a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't look in your personal chart. And you're not interested that he should be looking in your personal chart. Against the background of Klal Yisrael, you have a much better shot of getting what you're asking for. Much better shot. And the Rav pointed out, and not all the Paiskim agree, but the Rav was strong on this, and many, many Paiskim did agree, like Rav Henkin Zatzal in America, that women who come to shul are part of the tzibur. While we know that women do not create a minyan, but once there are 10 men in shul, so an 11th man walks into shul. So what is that? Is he's a hitchhiker? It's 10 plus 1? No, now the tzibur is 11. And there are 20 people in shul, now the tzibur is 20. You need 10 to get it rolling, but you can have a tzibur of 1,000. Once the 10 created the tzibur, man, woman, and child become part of the tzibur. And you know why that's important? For two reasons. One is because the women in their Shmon Esrei have that added advantage of the qualitative edge that it's against the background of Klal Yisrael. And that's what's probably the most important. Two, she participates in responding to Kaddish, Kedusha, Baruch Hu, Birkat Kohanim, and here's Kriyat HaTorah. Three, according to the Rav and other Poskim, she can say Kaddish. She can say Kaddish. This morning I had a woman saying Kaddish. She had Yartzeit, came to shul, said Kaddish. There's a whole issue whether a man should be saying Kaddish at the same time if a woman is saying Kaddish. Rav Henkin had that idea, because that was not because of the Kaddish reason, that was because of tzniut reason. He felt they didn't want that the woman should be heard from the lady section in the men's section. That was his issue. But somebody recently asked me, it was Rabbi Bienenfeld, who gives shulam right here, formerly Young Israel of St. Louis. He asked me if I knew the Rav position about a woman saying Kaddish in shul without a man saying Kaddish. And I said, I never heard the Rav on this subject. I do know that my brother Shulam Tinek, that's the case, because I was there once for a weekday minyan, and the only one saying Kaddish was a woman. So I took this little goylem, and I text my brother. Within a few minutes, my brother concurred that the Rav said that was his position. So now I can say publicly that the Rav also said you don't have to have a man. Although, he asked me what I do in Ol Nechama, I take the safe side, and I always have a man say, when I know a woman wants to say Kaddish, I make sure, there's usually a man saying Kaddish anyway, but I make sure that there's a man saying Kaddish, just that nobody should, you know, throw me out on that. You know, they want to throw me out, they can throw me out on other things, but at least not on that, you know. So this is important, that the tefillah carries with it both a prati, a private individual obligation, and there's also a corporate framework. And where does that emanate from? From Beit HaMikdash. because you can bring a private korban. You want to donate to Beit HaMikdash. Gesunde Heit, bring a korban. Either neder or nidava, the two frameworks. A woman gives birth, there's korban yoledet. That's a private korban. Fine. Korban todah. Today we have goimel instead. Right? So of course goimel some people misuse goimel, because the Rav pointed out that goimel is only to be said after a life-threatening situation. And that's a little bit subjective, because for two people going through the same experience, for one it was life-threatening, for the second it was a matter of fact. So fine. So the first one says goimel, the second doesn't. That's all. The halacha can't get down to nitty-gritty here, and what's considered. Some are objective. Giving birth is an objective, life-threatening situation. Even though, Baruch Hashem, everything was fine. But the woman was in a life-threatening situation, she's obligated in goimel. But a standard flight across the ocean, Rav Moshe Feinstein felt there was good reason, and the Rav said there was, if it's nothing went wrong, as 99.9% of the cases, it's just like another. It's a bus or a train or a car. It's a mode of transportation, and there's no reason for goimel. My sister lives in Chashmonaim, and a lot of the fellows there are high-tech people. They travel a lot, and they come on Shabbos. There were 30 people lined up by Shvi to send goimel. So the rabbi put an end to it, because it was a tircha tzibur. He said, one guy should send goimel and be moitzi everybody. Have a rotation. Every Shabbos, another guy benches goimel. But before the rabbi did that, and made that institution, so my sister had this real quip. She called it the Moadon HaGomel HaMatmid. Elal calls the frequent flyer Matmid. Moadon HaMatmid, which is the Matmid Club. So she called it the Moadon HaGomel HaMatmid. So there are those people who regular goimel. Regular goimel is an oxymoron. It's goimel is for special occasion. And you shouldn't misuse goimel. Would you have run to Beit HaMikdash every Monday morning to bring a korban toida? No. You would never have done that. In Bayit Shlishi, you got third Beit HaMikdash, and you're still going to be high-tech, and you're still going to America, to the Sacramento Valley, wherever you're going to do it, and you come back to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to bring a Korban Todah every day, every week, Beit HaMikdash, you're not going to do it. Guaranteed you're not going to do it. So that's when you're supposed to bench Goimel. Goimel is in lieu of a Korban Todah. But this is private. That's why any private Korban does not overrule Shabbos. So we'll wait till tomorrow. Hello, you don't have to. Slaughtering an animal is an Issa Torah. It's a biblical violation of Shabbat. So what is dealt with on Shabbat in Beit HaMikdash? Only those things that do not tolerate delay. That is the morning and afternoon korban for Shabbat. You can't bring Shabbos' korban on Sunday, because Sunday has Sunday's korban. Korban Musaf of Shabbat, right? And if it's Rosh Chodesh, you bring the Rosh Chodesh if it's Shabbat. And if it's Yom Tov, you bring the Yom Tov of Shabbat. If it's Yom Kippur, you do the Yom Kippur on Shabbat. That which does not tolerate delay, but and which do not tolerate delay, the Korban Tzibur, the corporate Korbanot, they do not tolerate delay. It has to be on that day. You know what else overrules Shabbat? And it's very similar. Brit Milah. Brit Milah? That's only if the baby was born on Shabbat the week before, and it was a natural delivery, not a cesarean. Then the Brit Milah overrules Shabbat, when you see from there that there's some aspect of Korban Tzibur. There's a big chiddush what I'm saying now. Because most people would put Brit Milah into the category of Chovat HaYachid. It's personal, it's private, like you know other mitzvot that are private. And here there's an indication that it might fall into the category of both Yachid and Tzibur. It's certainly an obligation on the individual. That is no question. But there is a strong minhag, to do a Brit Milah in the presence of a minyan. That doesn't have to be done. Very similar to reading the Megillah on Purim. You can read the Megillah at home, for yourself, for three people, whatever, for four people. But when you read it with a minyan, it's an upgrade. It's an add-on. So too, Brit Milah. Do Brit Milah in the presence of a minyan, it's an upgrade. And those who are familiar with the harachamans that are said for benching Birkat HaMazon at the meal of the Brit Milah, they relate directly to Korban. Directly to Korban. Some of them, not all, but they direct to Korban. There's a fulfillment of Korban. And that's a Korban Tzibur factor. And I'll even expand this right now. Late this afternoon, I'm participating in the Rome Hotel in a conference, a rabbinic conference on the subject of conversion process and the role of the community rabbi in conversions. And the issue of giur, we know that a man who converts has to have Brit Milah and Tvilah Nikva. So, and if a person was circumcised before, whether it was l'shem mitzvah or not, so they do what's called hatafatam brit. There's a certain symbolic bloodletting, which is in lieu of the brit. So there's a brit and there's a mikveh. So the Rav once explained that the brit is where the ger, potential ger, or the candidate for ger, takes upon himself the yoke of Klal Yisrael. He becomes part of the people. It's symbolic. He's willing to give blood for the people. And the mikveh is when he withdraws from reality for a split second. It's between him and God. And it all focuses on four words in Megillat Rut. Amech ami velokayech elokai. Rut said it all in four words. That's what Giyur is all about. And remember, Rav said that even though with women there's no brit milah, but she takes upon herself the same thing altogether. But with regard to men, it really plays itself out in the brit milah and the tefillah. The Gemara in Masechet Yevamot discusses whether mal velo taval, taval velo mal, if there's one or the other, is it considered a giyur? The bottom line is it's not, and you have to have both. And the reason is because to be a Jew, you have to be committed to Klal Yisrael and to God. And the interplay between the connection to God and to Klal Yisrael sometimes causes friction. And that's a discussion itself, and I can do that now. But so Brit Milah does have a facet of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, it overrides Shabbat, no different than the Korbanot of Shabbat. That's, I think, an interesting insight. So you have that category as well. So the Rav said that Kiyat Shofar is also in this category, this unique category of duality. And on the one hand, there's an individual obligation to hear the shofar. And you can fulfill that individual obligation with the first set of the 30 sounds of the shofar that are sounded out before Musaf, before you get to Ashrei, before you start, you heard 30 sounds. Now if you blow for a person at home, or if a person at home is blowing for himself or herself, a woman's allowed to blow for herself without a problem, and I've done this in hospital rooms, I've done this at home for people, you blow 30 kolot, you don't have to blow 100 kolot. No mitzvah to blow 100 kolot. Why? Because the 30 kolot, the 30 sounds, that covers the personal obligation. And the person didn't hear shofar, that's what the person has to hear. 30 sounds, finished. So what are the extras? The extras are, and that's why the minhag was to say it in Chazarat HaShatz, and to complete them in the Kaddish, where you're going to say Titkabel Tzlotonu Lotonu Vaoton Dechol Beit Yisrael after Musaf, because you want to make up the number 100, so we do some extras. And this is where the silent Shemon Esrei plays in, where some blow 30 kolot also in the silent Shemon Esrei as a forerunner, a prelude to the Chazarat HaShatz, and then they blow another 30, so they've taken care of 60. They had 30 before, 30, they have 90 ready, so they blow 10 kolot in Kaddish. But where do they blow it? The Chazan says Kaddish, and he gets to Damiran Be'almavim Ruamein, station break in the middle of Kaddish, right? And Tkiyah, start all over again for another set of 10 kolot. And then he continues, Titkabel Tzlotonu Vaoton. That's part of Shemon Esrei. That's the end game of Shemon Esrei. And I'll prove it halachically. What happens if you have 10 people in shul? You have a minyan, Baruch Hashem, 10th man came. And we once had a situation in shul where we were scratching out a minyan. And finally a 10th man showed up. And you know you want to compliment him, so I quoted the pasuk, "Vasiri yekodesh." So another person says, "Yeah, that was said about behemot." That pasuk was said about maasar behema, giving the 10th animal as maaser tithe. So you know to tell somebody "Vasiri yekodesh" is not necessarily a compliment. You're calling him a behema, but no. But I heard Lubavitcher Rebbe Zichron Baruch use it often enough with regard to the 10th of Shvat, and you always would say right away, parenthetically, Vasiri HaKodesh. The 10th is Kodesh. So that's the way we normally use it. So the person was Kodesh. So you have 10 people in shul, and Milchazar Shatz, a guy walks out. It can't happen. Guy walks out. Why? You got to make a train. He can't stay to the end of davening. All right, so now what do you do? So does he stop, does Chazan stop dead in his tracks? No. Continues Chazar Shatz. And there's Birchas Kayanim. Do the Kohanim go up to Duchen? Yeah. What about the Kaddish after davening? The Kaddish with Titkabel, you say. And then, every other Kaddish afterwards, you can't say, because you don't have a minyan. But the Kaddish with Titkabel is an integral part of the Shemon Esrei. So the rule is, if you started with a minyan, that which section that you started can be completed, because the concept of the minyan didn't flee. The man left, but the minyan didn't flee. The minyan's still there. And that's true for laning also. If you have an aliyah, and then one person leaves, Bal Kaira continues, and he can make the bracha at the end. Then you're stuck. So for the next aliyah, you have to have 10 people. But for that aliyah, keeps going. So you see that the tkiyas in the middle of the kaddish with titkabel, this zolhon of oton, is part of the shmonesrei tkiyas. So these are tkiyot mu'umad. These are the tkiyot that are called standing, because shmonesrei we stand, and it's the tkiyot of the tzibur. And the Rambam actually, in spite of the fact that he opens up with the standard expression, mitzvat aseh shel Torah lishmor kol turat ha-shofar b'rosh ha-shana shenemar b'yom turah yelachem, that's a standard opening. Later on in the text, he says, "Hatzibur chayavim lishmor atkiot." What's the Rambam telling me? Hatzibur chayav. He tells me, Rambam says, "Hakohanim, Aleviim, Yisraelim, Agerim, kulam chayavim. Hakol, kulam chayavim." Rambam doesn't tell me that about the eating matzah. The Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim, and Gerim have to eat matzah. If you're Jewish, you have to eat matzah. I mean, what's the question? What's the difference? Is a Kohen, a Levi, or a Ger? Why does Rambam have to tell us this? He's telling it to us only by those mitzvot with the emphasis on the tzibur. Because the tzibur is made up of component parts. Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim, Gerim. That's what makes up Klal Yisrael. So that's why Rambam makes the point. By the way, he does it also for the mitzvah of giving half a shekel. Mitzvah of giving half a shekel before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Yeah, from Rosh Chodesh Adar, they gave you a month to give the half a shekel. And what's the half shekel? So it's a private obligation. Mitzvah taseh shel Torah, litein machzit shekel shenemar. That's how Ram starts. It's a personal obligation. But it's not just a personal obligation. If you don't give, we're going to twist your arm. You better give. We're going to take your entertainment system from your house. The Mishnah says that the Beit Din, they bang the door down, they take your microwave, and didn't say that in the Mishnah, but that's if we rewrite it. They'll take out your furniture until you caved in and gave the half a shekel. My gosh, half a shekel is 6 shekel today. But why doesn't he want to give 6 shekel to Beit HaMikdash? Principim, you know, because he has it out for Mr. Cohen. You know, see, Mr. Cohen, you know, made him breakers once. So he's not giving this half shekel. You better give a half shekel. Why? Because you don't give a half shekel, then Klal Yisrael is missing half a shekel. It's Klal Yisrael who purchases the Korbanot Tzibur. All the corporate sacrifices of Beit HaMikdash were purchased from the piggy bank of the Machzit HaShekel. You better give. You better give. Piggy bank, right. Dad, Rivka doesn't like that. Take it back. Strike that from the record. It's like the Babich Rebbe said, you give kids toys, animal toys, that are only from the kosher variety. So Donald Duck is okay, but Mickey Mouse is a sheriff's. Rebbe said it. I know my Chabad. Right? A friend of mine who was the Rav in the university in Be'er Sheva said the whole Jewish world is divided into two, those who are Hasidei Chabad and those who are not yet Hasidei Chabad. So we understand that, that's all. So I got a jump start, you know. On Rosh Hashanah, we have two different types of mitzvot. This is the Rav explained. The mitzvah shofar for Yachid and mitzvah shofar for the Tzibur. And it's linked to tefillah, because tefillah itself comes in these two packages of private and corporate Tzibur. So here, Rav Sternberg says that the minag of blowing shofar on the month of Elul is only corresponds to the personal obligation, but has nothing at all to do with the Tzibur. On the one-on-one between you and God, you better, you know, put your record in shape, put your file in shape. He says, "Da o da minag litkoa bechodesh elul zeo batzibur dafka." Oh, I'm sorry. Only in the tzibur. I'm sorry. Only in the tzibur. Dumya compared to the tkiot de musaf de Rosh Hashanah al seda habrachot dehu betzibur dafka. And the question is, why? Why would that be? Why would this minag be only for a Klal Yisrael? Because it throws us back to Moshe Rabbeinu in days of the Midbar, where he was asking for Klal Yisrael. The whole issue of Chodesh Elul is not found in the Chumash as a private obligation. It's only seen in the narrative of Moshe Rabbeinu going up for 40 days and asking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should spare Klal Yisrael. So apparently what's important here is to come into Rosh Hashanah, where our national record is already looking good. Because when that happens, then we really have a fighting chance to make it through Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So this is what he said. So therefore, if a person davens at home, there's really no issue, there's no inyan, as they say, to take out a shofar and blow it during the month of Elul. I want to turn to the second page on the bottom. This is the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Classic. Rav Shlomo Ganzfried from Hungary 300 years ago. So he summarizes, so we used to use this in Yeshiva elementary school in the States as a basic text to study halacha from fifth grade on until high school when you start using the Mishnah Berurah. So he writes, Noagim litkoa shofar b'chodeseh, very simple, the custom is to blow the shofar. He does not make any distinction, as Rav Sternbuch did, between Rosh Chodesh and the rest of the month. Matchilim, we begin Beyom Bet the Rosh Chodesh, on the second day of Rosh Chodesh, because the first day of Rosh Chodesh is still the last day of Av. Second day of Rosh Chodesh is the first of Elul. V'tokim b'chol yom lachar tefilat shacharit, we blow after shacharit, tkiyah shvarim teruah tkiyah. Chutz mi'erev Rosh Hashanah. She'mafsikim bo kedei lafsik bein tkiyot rishut l'tkiyot mitzvah. I want to make it very clear that what we're blowing in Elul is not part of the mitzvah of blowing on Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, on Erev Rosh Hashanah, we demonstratively do not blow. So we know that tomorrow, on Rosh Hashanah, we're blowing because of the mitzvah. And what we blew beforehand was optional. It was just because of the minhag, and so on. The reason for these blowings, these sounds, broadly stated, is to stimulate tshuva. That's the nature of the shofar, to awaken and to frighten, to put people into panic a little bit. Obviously, a person is moved by the sound of the shofar. We're going to get back to this point in a second, why we do not blow on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Od noagim b'mdinot elu, in our countries, he's talking about Hungary and so on, but it's really minhag Ashkenaz. Miyom bet the Rosh Chodesh Elul, from the second day of Rosh Chodesh, ad shmini atzeret, omrim baboker ube'erev, lachar tefillah, et ha'mizmor l'David Hashem ori v'yishi. This is Tehillim Perek of Zion. V'hu al pi ha'midrash, Hashem ori b'Rosh Hashanah, yish'i b'yom ha'kippurim, ki yitzpeneni b'suko, remez l'sukot. Period. Let's stop here. So, ever the classic reason why we say l'David Hashem ori. But there might be another reason. Take a look at source number 5 on top of the page. Let's look at source number 4 first, top of the page. Source number 4 on top of the page. The Rambam from the Hilchot Teshuvah. So here the Rambam, famous Rambam, you've heard this in Shir many times over. The Rambam believes that on Rosh Hashanah, that's where the real Mishpat takes place. It's Yom HaDin. And a person has more Zchuyot than Chovot, he's going to make it through the year. He has, God forbid, more Avonot than Zchuyot, he's not going to make it through the year. And if you're on the 50-50 line, then you have overtime. You get the Aseret Mei Teshuvah, and you make it to Yom Kippur, try to tip the scale. All right, so what's in the file? You don't have an idea. You don't have a clue. So because we don't have a clue what's in the file, so Rambam recommends not to be overly confident and think, oh, I have plenty of mitzvahs, I'm okay, I don't have to deal with Rosh Hashanah this year. Or the flip side, I have so many Averis, it doesn't make a difference. I won't take Rosh Hashanah seriously either. Don't think either way. Think you're half-half. And the Aseret Mei Teshuvah is really going to be critical for you. And he says that's where we should go into Aseret Mei Teshuvah. And therefore he says in the underlined, in the second part of source number 4, Mivnei Inyan Zeh, because of this, Nagu Kol Beit Yisrael Laharbot. Laharbot b'tzedakah masim tovim v'lasok b'mitzvot m'Rosh Hashanah v'Yom Kippurim yeter mikol hashanah. The custom of Am Yisrael is to upgrade in these days between Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, the Aseret Mei Teshuvah, more tzedakah, more good deeds, more mitzvot. Look for mitzvahs, seek out mitzvot, mitzvah that you never frequent during the year. Try to perform another mitzvah. And because of this, by the way, the Vilna Gaon was against a minhag Ashkenaz brought down by the Ramah of delaying Kiddush Levana until after Yom Kippur. That's our minhag. That after we go out of shul for Motzei Yom Kippur, before you run home to put your face into food, so we say Kiddush Levana, and then you go home. Why? Because Kiddush Levana is like a, it's appreciating the presence of God, and it's besimcha. You can never be more besimcha than after Yom Kippur, where you feel confident that you received the slicha, mechila, and kapara. Great time, great moment to say Kiddush Levana. Says the Vilna Gaon, why delay the Kiddush Levana till after Yom Kippur? Maybe the Kiddush Levana will be the mitzvah that's going to tip the scale for you. Why waste it? The opportunity. You're obligated, according to everybody, after the 7th of Tishrei. According to most Ashkenazim, after the 3rd of Tishrei. According to Rambam, after Rosh Hashanah, you could do. After Aleph, you could do Kiddush Levana. So wait till the 11th, the night of the 11th of Tishrei, after Yom Kippur. It was because of this Rambam. The Vilna Gaon said, and then Rav Tukhachinsky's calendar, he writes that we in our neighborhood, Shari Chesed here, we do Kiddush Levana during Aseres Metshuva, during Motzei Shabbos of Shabbos Shuva. And not wait till after Yom Kippur. Because of this, you're looking for mitzvahs. Right, the person looking for mitzvahs, he opens up the Sefer Chinuch, and there's a chart there of all the mitzvot. Ah, Parashat Ki Tetzeh, we just read it last week. Let's see, which mitzvah did I not perform yet? Ah, divorcing one's wife. Never did this mitzvah. Okay. Hinani muchanim zuman l'kayim mitzvah sase shel gerushin l'shem yichud kutshe b'richu shinte. Loves his wife dearly, but he wants to do another mitzvah. Those aren't the mitzvahs the Rambam has in mind. It's like Rabbi Tendler taught us once, you don't have to do averus to fulfill the mitzvah of tshuva. It doesn't say anywhere. You don't have to shatter the guy's window to fulfill the mitzvah of correcting nezek. You don't have to steal to fulfill the mitzvah of v'heshivet ha'gzeila asher gazal. Torah says, return the stolen object. I never stole. So how can I do this mitzvah? So I have to steal. So those are mitzvot. Why are they called mitzvot? You know, in Yiddish, we use the word that did a mitzvah, getona mitzvah. That means you did a maisa chesed, did something good. But that's not what the word mitzvah means. Mitzvah means a command, a divine command. That's what it means. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us procedures for life, knowing fully well human frailties and weaknesses that we have. So we do damage, and we have things that go wrong, and marriages break up. So there's a way to do things. And anything in the Torah, any procedure that the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, this is the way to do it, if such and such happens, is called a mitzvah. That's called a mitzvah. That's all. That's why Rav Shach was very much against the line that was authored by Rav Nachman from Breslov, mitzvah gedola liyot besimchat tamid, right? Mordechai and David made a big niggin out of this, right? Mitzvah gedola liyot besimchat tamid. He says, what do you mean mitzvah gedola? There's a mitzvah of evel. You're supposed to do it besimcha. How can you be mitabel besimcha? So Rav Shach said, he turned it around. He said, simcha gedola liyot b'mitzvah tamid. That it's a big simcha that whatever you're doing is always a mitzvah. It says that you can say. Simcha gedola liyot b'mitzvah tamid. That's a Lithuanian way of looking at it. That's only a Litva can do that. But all right, so Rav Shach was a Litva. Rav Nachman was a chosid, you know. Mitzvah gedola liyot b'simcha tamid, right? So here the Rambam says upgraded mitzvot, and then he says v'noagim v'noagu kulam lakum b'layla b'asara yamim elu ulitpalel b'vatei chenesiyot b'divrei tachnunim u'b'kibushin ad she'yeor hayom. One word, slichot. The Rambam has slichot for 10 days. Notice, including the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, including Shabbat. Not that we today have slichot basically for 7 days, because we only say slichot on weekdays. And even on Erev Yom Kippur, we abbreviate it. But all right, there are some slichos there. But the Rambam has, for the 10 days, ba'asarayamim elu, for these 10 days. He doesn't say for the days, intermediary days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. He uses that phrase elsewhere, but not here. Which means the Rambam believes that at 4:45 in the morning, like the shuls in my neighborhood have signs, Rebbe l'chamesh, slichot, bashmorat ha-boker, ad she'yor hayom. Not like we Ashkenazim will say slichas at 7:30 in the morning. No, if the nets, Rambam never heard of something like that. So this is upgrade. This is upgrade. Upgrade tefillah. More tefillah. Where does that come from? Source number 5. Amar Rav Chama bar Chanina. Im ra'a adam shemitpalel v'lo nana. Person davening nebuch for somebody very sick. And you davened, and the person is still very sick. Yachzor v'itpalel. Daven again. Don't give up. Don't give up, Shenemar. Kaveh al Hashem chazak v'ya'ametz libecha v'kaveh al Hashem. V'kaveh al Hashem means my hope, from the word mikveh Yisrael Hashem in Yirmiyahu. Although Rabbi Akiva made a whole drasha that it has to do with the mikveh, ma mikveh meteret et meyim hafakadosh b'chu meteret Yisrael, but the pshat of mikveh Yisrael Hashem is the hope of Klal Yisrael is God. He's our only hope. Our only hope. Word, dagesh on the emphasis on the word only hope. It's not like you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I got other things also. I go to others. It has to be exclusive. Because the Yom Niroim, you don't look elsewhere. Ki lecha tichra kol berech tishava kol lashon. Ki lecha, lecha af lecha. Only to you. Only to you. This is exclusive HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if anybody else is out there that you think you want to turn to, it's wrong. It's bordering on Avodah Zarah. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu only, exclusively. And here the Gemara says that a person davens and doesn't see that there were results. Continue davening. This is the motivational force for upgraded tefillah be'et zarah, in time of distress. Where's this pasuk from? Tilim Kaf Zayin. It's the last pasuk of Le David Hashem Ori V'Yishi. Kaveh El Hashem Chazak V'Yametz Libecha V'Kaveh El Hashem. It is very likely that this parak was selected to be said morning and night during the month of Elul, all the way until the end of Sukkot. And I'll say a moment about what is the end of Sukkot. Is it Hoshana Rabbah or Shmini Atzeret? The kids of Shulchan Aruch sitting in Hungary said Shmini Atzeret. In a moment I'll comment. But here in Eretz Yisrael we quit on at the Mincha, or Shachris really. Those who daven Ashkenaz only say it for Mayriv and for Shachris. Those who daven Sfarad say it for Mincha and Shachris. But we finish on Hoshana Rabbah. There is no L'dav Hashem Ori on Simchat Torah, which is Shmini Atzeret there. And it means it's the end of Sukkot. The end of Sukkot. Why? So you're going to say, because it says, ki tzbeneini b'sukkah, you b'sukko, so it's a remiss to Sukkah. But what does this have to do with Kaveh El Hashem Chazak b'yameitz libecha? It has to do with the fact that the season for tefillah didn't really come to an end with the end of Yom Kippur. The season for upgraded tefillah. But because Chag HaSukkot is the issue of water, rainfall, Chag Nidonim Al Hamayim, and it leads into Tfilat Geshem. According to one opinion in the Mishnah, Masha Baruch Mar Geshem, we start already on the first day of Sukkot. But we don't hold like that. We begin it on the last day, Shmini Atzeret. Fine. But the taking of the Arba Minim is an indirect tefillah for Geshem. Gemara says it clearly in Maseret Ta'anit Bet Amud Bet, Ritzui Al Mayim. In Beit HaMikdash, they poured water on the Beit HaMikdash, on the Mizbeach rather. It's called Nisu Hamayim. All this was to promote tefillah for rain. We're getting into the rain season. As the agricultural year draws to an end with Sukkot, it's called Chag HaAsif. It's the Yom Tov of the gathering of everything, the of our grains and fruits and so on. It's the end of the agricultural year. It's also the Rosh Hashanah. It's the new year for looking towards the winter already of the next year. We need rain. And it all begins on Chag HaSukkot. So this upgraded tefillah until the end of Sukkot. So that's why it's still appropriate to continue the David Hashem Ori V'Yishi in the context of what I just said, Kaveh El Hashem Chazak V'Yametz Libecha V'Kaveh El Hashem, that a person davens, not sure that received whatever he or she asked for, keep it writing, keep davening. Don't give up. Don't give it up. I think that this probably has a lot to do with the reason why we say the David Hashem Ori. Now, with regard to the two minagim of stopping the David Hashem Ori on Shmini Atzeret or on Shana Rabbah, this has to do with Yom Tov Sheni. Simple Yom Tov Sheni consideration. Because if it has to do with the remez, the allusion to Sukkot, so is there a mitzvah of Sukkah on the eighth day of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret? So biblically speaking, no. It's a different Yom Tov. It's a regel b'fnei atzmo. But with regard to Chutz La'aretz, just as the second day of Yom Tov is a safek, maybe it's the first, even though today there's no doubt at all, but we keep it up anyway because of the minhag of Yom Tov Sheni and Chutz La'aretz. But it's originated because of a doubt. So there was a doubt whether this day is Shmini Atzeret, but it might be the seventh day of Sukkot. So because it might be the seventh day of Sukkot, you have to sit in the Sukkot. The Gemara says very clearly, on Shmini Atzeret, the Chutz La'aretz, you have to sit in the Sukkot. But don't make the bracha v'tzivanu l'shev Sukkah, because that's going to clash with Kiddush. You just made a Kiddush on Shmini Atzeret HaChagazeh. You just announced that it's Shmini Atzeret. It's not Sukkot. So how can you say l'shev Sukkah? That's not going to work. So there's eating in the Sukkah, in Shmini Atzeret, all meals. This is what I'm saying now is perfectly halachic, except that the Hasidim put a little damper into this, or not a damper, maybe they the Hasidim had a minhag that we don't eat in the Sukkah and Chutz La'aretz on Shmini Atzeret. Just in the morning we go in for Kiddush, and then we go home and eat. I grew up on that minute, because, you know, we're sons of Hasidim. So, I mean, how exactly did that work? How can the Hasidim undo a halacha? Well, the Vilna Gaon asked that question also, you know, in his... But this is a Kabbalistic idea. My father, Al Bisholm, explained this to me many, many years ago. He said it was an identification of Anshei Eretz Yisrael. That the Chassidim, you know, the Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't start Mashiach now. It's part and parcel of the Baal Shem Tov. The Lubavitcher became very activist in this, that's for sure. You know, in terms of promoting it and going very public with it. But the idea of the imminent coming of Mashiach is the Baal Shem Tov, and it's a direct result of the Shabtai Tzvi movement. That's a whole speech in itself. So there's a lot of messianism in Hasidic thought, and doing things as Erev Yemot HaMashiach. It's Otatot, it's here. So we're getting the machinery, you know, oiled up for Yemot HaMashiach. And therefore, and there will be a Sanhedrin, there won't be any more calendar based on the 19 years, there will be Kiddush HaChodesh. So there won't be Yom Tosheni anymore, because everybody's going to know when Rosh Chodesh, because you have a phone. Everybody's going to be in shul, there's going to be WhatsApp and SMSs and whatnot, and every Gabbai is going to be online to get the Mekudesh from the Beit in Yerushalayim, and shine, he'll go Yalla V'Yavoy, and then everybody knows it's Rosh Chodesh, and tomorrow's not Rosh Chodesh, or yesterday one. They'll know it. Instantaneously they'll know it. The whole problem, Yom Tosheni, was by a problem of communication. So Mishnayot, the Masechta Rosh Hashanah, how to communicate. And in Bavel, they couldn't get the message over 2 weeks after Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Couldn't get the message over. I mean, there's the view in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that in Bavel, they first caught wind of the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash a half a year later, on the 5th of Tevet. The 5th of Tevet, according to Rabbi Shimon, that's the fast of the month of Tevet. And the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed in Av, 6 months later. They caught wind of it. There was no communication. So Beit Rosh Chodesh was a communications issue. And there won't be, Baruch Hashem, we've solved the communications issue. So that's why the Chassidim introduced the idea that we should stop eating in the Sukkah already on Shmini Atzeret, in identification of Anshei Eretz Yisrael, but to remind ourselves that the halacha is that you should eat the Sukkah. So in the morning they went and made Kiddush in the Sukkah, of course without Leisha B'Sukkah, but that's nobody makes Leisha B'Sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. But anyway, because of this dispute between the, not dispute, difference between the Minhag Eretz Yisrael and Minhag Chutz La'aretz on whether you sit in the Sukkah or not, you have the spillover of the Dovid Hashem Ori in Chutz La'aretz to Shmini Atzeret. That's why. But here, it's inappropriate, because everybody is finished with Sukkot on Hashanah Rabbah, on the 7th day of Sukkot. So there's no Dovid Hashem Ori any longer on the Shmini Atzeret. And there was one more point. Yeah. We flip back to source number 2, and I'm still in that last paragraph. I'll tell you how many lines from the bottom. 5 lines from the bottom of source number 2. 5 lines from the bottom. 5 lines above source number 3, okay? In the middle of the paragraph, it begins, V'ayim Levush. See the book called, the Sefer called Levush. It's called Levush Mordechai. She'ein tokim be'erev Rosh Hashanah. Right? We mentioned before from the name of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch that we don't blow on Erev Rosh Hashanah because we should make a hefsik, a distinction, an interruption between the tekiel that are mitzvah, obligatory on Rosh Hashanah, and those that are just minag. We call it Rishut. Here he quotes a Sefer, Rav Sternbuch here quotes a Sefer, the Levush, that we don't blow on Erev Rosh Hashanah, k'dei lafsik bein shofar de takanat chachamim l'shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shu min haTorah. Okay, so to distinguish between one is rabbinic and one is biblical. Mashma, it appears from this, shekol elul hachiyuvu mitakanat chachamim. What did Rav Sternbuch develop before? That there are two different customs within the month of Elul. There was Rosh Chodesh Elul, and that was a bona fide institution of Chazal. And then was the rest of Elul, that was just a minhag, it was a lower order. Here, the Levush comes along and says, all of Chodesh Elul, the whole month, is Takanat Chachamim, is it a rabbinic institution? And that's what he seems to suggest. Aval, b'makom acher, bet mem aleph, b'makom acher, in another place, he catches the author of the Levush, Shina changed what he wrote. V'katav kedei lavdil ben tkiot rishut l'tkiot chova. Dahainu kemo shekatavnu. But basically, what we saw already in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, he rewrote it and restated it and said it's distinguished between the obligatory and that which is optional. And reshut smacks more of minhag than obligation, but just rabbinic. When you say takanah chachamim, like lighting Hanukkah candles or reading the Megillah on Purim, these aren't optional. This is not reshut. This is obligatory, except that it's obligatory on the level of the Rabbanan, rabbinic, as opposed to obligatory biblically, minatorah, midoraita. But if you say it's reshut, that means it's minhag. So you see, the same author, in two different sections, changed his expression. Once he refers to the blowing of the month of Elul as takanat chachamim, which means it's obligatory on the level of rabbinic. And another time he calls it reshut, which means it's optional, which suggests that it's minhag. It's custom. So he leaves it, he says, I don't know what to do with him. You know, he's contradicting himself. Va'ayin, and see the shla. Who's the shla? Shlein chot abrit. The be'et shmi'at hatkiot b'chodesh elu. When you hear the sounds during the month of Elul, yaharher b'tshuva, you should really think carefully, and not that, you know, you're 1 foot out of the shul, but you spend a moment of contemplation. And then he quotes another source and says, she'yifke v'yafok panav alakir. You should cry and turn your face to the wall. I've never seen that. I mean, I'm looking at this line of such a strange minhag that I've never seen in my life, and I'm looking at the Kotel HaMaravi that used to be referred to as the Wailing Wall. And I don't think we called it the Wailing Wall. We never called it the Wailing Wall. We called it the Kotel HaMaravi, the Western Wall. I think the British called it the Wailing Wall. Maybe the Ottoman Turks called it the Wailing Wall because they saw Jews crying there. Just, this is the wall, the people, Osveinen, they cry, you know. But here he says, look at the wall, you know, they say, why does many times, you heard this from me 100 times, I'll say it again, because Rabbi Shaw is here. Why does the kallah go, they have a wedding to be photographed by the kotel, and daven mincha there, because it's nice for the album and so on, because she has to get used to talking to the wall. When I tell this to young couples, I always tell them it's not a joke. So this minhag of looking at the wall and crying is of interest, because what does that suggest? Again, I'm not telling you to do this because nobody does this, but it's an insight. What does it mean? I remember the Rav once pointed out in a tshuva drasha, the language of the Rambam in the first chapter of Hilchot Tshuva. Chayav litvadot lifnei hakel baruch hu. He has to confess before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chayav litvadot lifnei hakel baruch hu. So Rav said, what is the Rambam telling us? Did you think otherwise? Who else are you going to say confession to? So Rav said, there are people out there who become Balei Tshuva and it becomes part of their CV. It becomes part of their bios when they're introduced to speakers. And he's a Baal Tshuva. Baal Tshuva, you keep to yourself. You keep the process of Tshuva to yourself. Between you and God. It's not for public dissemination. The people know that yesterday you were not Shomer Shabbat, and today you are, that's fine. But you don't have to broadcast it. You don't have to go over to a group of people and say, Oy, chatosei, avisi, pashati. No. Lifnei hakel baruch hu. It's between you and God. And I think this is the reference of crying to the wall. You cry to the wall, it means you're clearly not looking at anybody else. You're hibernating with yourself. And I think that's what happened with the Kotel. I think what really happened with the Kotel throughout the generations is people saw it as a moment of hibernating with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One-on-one. And you felt it. You felt that closeness. And it's nobody's business what you're davening for. Just keep it to yourself. And I think this is the reference to V'yifke, and he says, V'yafoch panav alakir, V'yavakesh, V'yud gilma midot, shel rachamim, chazdei Hashem baruch hu. When we say the shlosh esrei midot, Hashem Hashem kerachum v'chanun, during slichot, we should really, that's the moment of really thinking. You don't spell out anything then, just think. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows exactly, he's bochein kloyot v'lev. Knows exactly what's going on in our hearts, in our emotions, in our thoughts. You keep that agenda on high when you're saying Shlosh Esrei Midot, and in the spirit of saying it collectively with the Tzibur, and indeed Shlosh Esrei Midot is said with the Tzibur, Kadosh Baruch Hu should take action And if it doesn't work the first time, another Shlosh Yisrael Midot. Kaveh El Hashem Chazak V'yameitz Nebecha V'kaveh El Hashem.
You have 30 seconds to me?
Yeah.
I have a complicated Shiloh that came across the desk.
Yeah.